Nes mat se gan vigéisi an sa chléir se le ben a Dr. Breezy Bolawari agus tá sciilí go leor len sé Breezy agus tá si go len se fá na hági gur i níos agus a samat a chéan sa tchantíl agus cócarart go spéisialt agus sciú si leor ar cócarart agus na rodí dólan na mohéidí agus na cors níos anol ba sin tá si gur leol couple uaren an hodiad a sin agus tá character ín taig Breezy so Breezy you're more comfortable on your English, even though you love Gaelic, the language.
Well, more or more Gaelic. Och, ni fasen me as Gaelic. Tell me you feel them.
Tell me you feel them, agus tig into quite a...
Och, ni'l me abel the...
Coda, you know.
Scale and no. Shen.
But regardless, Breezy, do you want me to... I like your piece on your youth and your background and all that, but would you like to tell me why you're called Breezy Wolof?
Well... I suppose it's good too because I have two birthdays every year. This year I was 15 on the 1st of February.
Right, so you're much younger.
Yes. But my natural birth is, I was born on the 3rd of March. No, the 4th, what date was I born? The 4th of March, 1964. Mary Alice Teresa Kelly, I was christened. But... because of my childhood and just a lot of baggage I had with me all my life into my adulthood, there came a time for change. Anyway, it happened, funnily enough, I went to a hypnotherapist to try and stop smoking. So she is, she lights a cigarette.
It hasn't worked, crazy.
No, it hasn't worked, Donald. But a lot of other good things came out of it. But anyway, the guy I went to, his name was Niket. He believes that all the abuses we give our bodies, drinking too much, eating too much, smoking too much, whatever, drugs, da 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 da, it's because of something that we think we should be punishing ourselves for, if you like. And anyway, when I went to the first session, I didn't think anything was happening. And then he's asked me to go back and think of the earliest happy memory I had, and I just couldn't think of anything. But I went back to a particular point that was sad for me as a child, and I just started crying, and I cried for hours, Donald, for hours, and. After a few sessions anyway, I was cured of a lot of things, not the smoking. But when I was leaving, Niket, he said to me, he said, "You're leaving Mary Alice behind here." And I knew what he meant, but I was still, you know, as far as Mary Alice, he said, "I think you should change your name, because it's a new beginning." And he said, "Is there any name you'd like to be called?" And I said, "Well, no, not really, that can immediately come to mind, you know." And he said, Breezy Willow. And he said, "Breezy, because you're always going to be bending all over the place. And like a willow, you'll bend, but you'll never break." That's basically it.
So that's how you got your name.
That's.
But it was good, Breezy,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, well... You know, and funny, Donald, it took me a long time to establish the name. Because in the beginning, it became almost a frantic obsession.
Yeah.
I'm now breezy, you know.
Now you don't even think of it.
I don't even think about it. And it does take me by surprise sometimes when I hear my name, Mary
Your
Alice.
Old name, yeah.
But it doesn't annoy me anymore.
So it helped you so much. Like
it did,
definitely.
It did. Do you know the way it is? I mean, you know the old saying, call me anything you like, but not too early in the morning.
Well, you see, tell me a wee bit of your youth. You were brought up, you said, in the Maw's Inn.
I was born in the Maw's Inn. My mother, a woman by the name of Yvonne, well, her maiden name, Doherty, and she was married to a man by the name of Conal Kelly, and they got married, and they bought the Maw's, or it was Malloy's Hotel at the time, and my older brother John and I were both born there. And then when I was about 18 months, they moved to where that old other ruin, the Kelvin in
At the end of
Glenpings
the
is.
street in
Yeah, at the
Glenties,
corner
right?
there, you have the Grotto.
So it was an old hotel, the Moss Inn, and
Yes.
did your parents run it as a hotel,
They
or
did,
did they
yes. In
did?
fact, Mammy cooked her own wedding breakfast.
My God.
Yeah.
So
Mammy was an amazing cook, mother, friend. Anyway, sorry.
this is where you took a great interest in cooking, Breezy. Like, she was brilliant at baking and all that.
Oh,
Yeah.
I refer to her as the master baker. Yeah. She, my grandmother as well, Mammy's mother. I called her Minnie the Minx. She was, well, Doherty. She married a man from Greencastle, Neil Doherty. And she was Mary Ellen McDyer from Kilrain, but everybody called her Minnie. I called her Minnie the Minx. But she as well, she was a baker extraordinaire. But I think those generations were,
Oh, they were, yeah.
it's like, yeah,
It came naturally
it
to
just
them.
came naturally.
Yeah, and they never measured when they were baking, just.
A handful of this and
Yeah.
an eyeful of
Yeah, and
that.
it is
That was
true, though.
basically, and that's the
Yeah.
way I learned to bake from my mother as well initially. I remember, Donald, when I got the idea I don't say that I wrote the book, I compiled it
Right, right.
because it's a collection of recipes that I've gathered from, well, my mother, of course, but also from children at schools that I visited, and then there's little stories dispersed throughout it and all the rest, but like gathering the recipes of Mammy, like the two of us trying to figure out a way of saying, now how do you so she would measure with her eye and
Yeah.
I would get a cup to measure her eye measurement and we got the system going.
Yeah. So three handfuls of this, and you had to measure that. Yeah. Brilliant, though. But
So
you think, though, Bracey, the world has to go back to the older way and, start home baking and the way the world was in your youth growing up, like.
Donald, it would be foolish of us to expect to go right back. I
Yeah.
mean, there are advancements that if we could have realized that that's far enough, and kept the old ways. I mean, the very fact that today, on this date, in the year 2009, that it is illegal to keep a cow
Yeah.
to milk for your own use.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of wisdom is that? What kind of wisdom is that? And what galls me, Donal, is these regulations that are imposed on us and that we accept it willingly. What for? Some fucking motorways
Yeah.
that are fucking leading. Do you know what they'll be called? The fucking famine roads in the
They
future,
will be,
Donal.
yeah.
It'll be a
Yeah.
bit like the famine walls. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. But these rules and regulations are made by bucks probably that never set foot on a
Yeah.
farm in their
And who
lives.
don't know anything about it in the first
Do you
place, yeah.
know? Do you know? I
Yeah.
mean, the old buck that I used to know, he used to say that the problem today is there's too much education is on the people, and that despite all the books they read, they still know buck all. Do you know? And it's true. That story about the donkey. I think that I end to remember that,
But it is true, though, Breezy. Like, even education, it has advantages, but at the same time, they know little about living on this earth, like, and going back to the farming and growing your own food and all that. And I reckon
There has to be some reclaiming of it.
yeah.
There has to be. Like Donald. And as kid, I mean, referring to when I go to the schools, I try to just give children ideas, not to ram my ideas down their throat, but to open their
Their
minds a wee
minds,
bit, if
yeah.
you like.
So you go to schools,
I do,
yeah.
I do, just to bake bread and have a
Yeah,
crack with
yeah.
weans, but like they're so, the children today are so materialistic. So materialistic. But they don't know any different. It's
no,
not
it's
their
the way
fault.
They're brought up, like,
you know,
yeah.
Buy them the PlayStation or the Xbox or whatever other accoutrements, do you know? I don't know what... Parents are so busy, they don't have the same time that my parents
no.
even had to sit down and share a family meal or whatever. But I'd be saying to them, you know, when they're on, I say, listen, children, you know, famines have happened in Ireland before, and there's nothing to say they won't happen again. And we could buy and this, that. And I say to them, listen, just use your imaginations. Just think, if for some reason tomorrow morning you woke up and the supermarket shelves were empty and there was no possibility of getting to supermarkets, and you had a bucket of money and a bucket of spuds, which would be the most valuable? They get it, you know.
They do.
They get it.
So you travel to the schools locally, Breezy, or?
I've been all over the country, don't I?
Have you?
It all started. I was in a number of years in a bad place in my head, or they call it depression. I don't call it depression. It was just I didn't know what to do, because the world I grew up in was just disappearing around me. I mean, the fields I played in, they're all built on. The trees I climbed are cut. Do you know that kind of a way? It came to a point, Donald, the sound of a chainsaw, it was agony almost for me. Do you know? And I got involved in all sorts of environmental things and, you know, petitions for this, that and the other thing. Well, I might as well have sat my arse, for it changed nothing. It's all happened, do you know? But in the middle of all that preoccupation with saving the planet, I was neglecting my doorstep, if you like, you know. And I remember somebody said to me one day about it was a badge I saw on somebody's think globally, act locally, do you know? And while I did act locally, I mean, that LMMDS thing, do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
Do you remember the one that chained herself to the cattle grid?
Oh, I do.
That was me. That was me, Donald. That was one of my many madnesses. But, so I actually tried then, it was one day sitting here at this kitchen table, and my mind going all over the place about poor this and poor that, and just something came to me. Breezy, instead of sitting around moping and fighting hopeless cases,
go and do something.
Do something you can do, you know, and that's how it all started. And just again, Donald, from the mother herself, it has to be the case, because where else did it come from? But just the idea of baking bread with children, because so few children were actually experiencing it in these times. So I went up to the local national school, Paddy McDyer. He'd be a son of Columba McDyer,
who played for Donegal
Yeah. Paddy, and Paddy's very open-minded, you know, and he's open to new ideas and so on. And I went up to him, and I suppose maybe he decided to give it a shot, because he saw something in it. But I says, Paddy, listen, I have this wee idea, you know, to bake buns with children and tell them a wee story, and, you know, would you let me give it a trial run here? Paddy said, Breezy, any day that suits you. So at that stage, I didn't have a portable oven. So it was a case of baking the batch. Even the story, that first story, came in that way as well.
Yeah.
The Tickle Tom Cherry Bun story.
Tell me that story as well.
The stories are all set in a village called Glentown. And Glentown sits at the foot of Happy Hill, just below She Mountain, and it's a stone's throw from wherever you happen to be at any given time. But anyway, there's a lot of lovely characters who live in Glentown, and Mrs. Kelly is one of them. And Mrs. Kelly, she was out in the garden and picking fruits and berries and all the rest, and she was thinking in her head about the harvest fair day, which would have, which was be on the 12th of September, which was 3 days away, do you know? And I in Glentown they have the a fair day, a harvest fair day every September, Donald. And around that day, Mrs. Molloy, she brings baskets that she's made from the sallies that grow about the place. She brings them to the fair. Mr. Boyle brings his spuds with him that he's been growing all year, and he says the same thing every year, Donald. Ha ha! Balls of flour, balls of flour. And then there's Mr. Brown. And Mr. Brown, he brings the sheep, you know, that he's been rearing all year, and or the lambs. And his wife, she brings hats and gloves and scarves and just things she's knitted throughout the year from the wool of the husband's sheep.
Sheep, yeah.
And then there's Old Jack. And Old Jack arrives himself and the sheepdog Shep. And you know, to look at Shep, you'd nearly swear he's older than Old Jack. But a very loyal companion of Jack. But Old Jack entertains the wains in the morning, you know, the earlier part of the day in the village green, do you know? And then later on in the pub, the adults, he entertains them with his stories, do you know? But anyway, Mrs. Kelly out in the garden and just thinking about, right, I'll start the bake in the morrow and da da da, because she brings her Tickle Tom cherry buns every year. And there isn't a wain in Glentown, Donald, that would say that the harvest fair day was the same without Mrs. Kelly's Tickle Tom cherry buns, do you know? Anyway, the next thing the phone rings and Mrs. Kelly puts her basket down on the grass and answers the phone. Yes. Oh dear, I'll be there right away, says she to the voice, you know, the other end of the line. And wasn't it a neighbour of her sister's who lives in Castletown, which is about 12 miles from Glentown. And the sister had taken very sick, and Mrs. Kelly would have to go immediately to look after her. And in that same moment, she realised, well, bang goes the Tickle Tom cherry buns. So she's going about busying herself, and the next thing there's a knock at the door, and it's Mrs. Kelly knew immediately it would be young Alice from the village, for you could nearly set your clock by her. Every day after school, when Alice would get home, she'd have a bite to eat, she'd do her homework, she had a few wee chores to do, and then she'd head off to Finn's Forest with Sailor, her dog. But she always called with Mrs. Kelly on the way. So Mrs. Kelly says, "Come in, Alice." And when Alice went in, she knew right away that Mrs. Kelly wasn't her usual self, let's say. "What's wrong, Mrs. Kelly?" says Alice. And Mrs. Kelly says, "I'm after getting news that my sister isn't well, and I have to go on over to Castletown and look after her, and I'm not going to be here to make the buns." And Alice says, "Oh God, we're all so, going to be just so disappointed, because the fair isn't the same without, wouldn't be the same without them." And in that moment, Mrs. Kelly thought, and says she out loud, "No, the God, what am I thinking of, Alice? Sure, couldn't you make them? Haven't you been helping me make them for years?" "Well, God, Mrs. Kelly, Alice says, it's one thing helping you, but doing it on my own now, I don't know. I don't think I can do that." And Mrs. Kelly says to her, "Now, Alice, what am I always telling you? There's no such word as can't." And Alice thought to herself, "Oh well," and says she, "sure, I'll give it a shot then." And Mrs. Kelly cheered up right away, and she set about putting her bag together. And anyway, to cut a long story short, off she goes. Alice is left in charge of things, heads off to the forest that day, thinking, "Sure, what can we do today, Sailor? We might as well go to the forest and enjoy ourselves." So anyway, at school the next day, it was all the news that Mrs. Kelly was away, and Alice could hear the wains, you know, saying, "Ah, oh, fair's just not going to be the same," and all that. And she thought, "God, you know, I'll put them out of their misery." And up she goes to them and says she, "Excuse me, there is going to be Tickle Tom cherry buns." And Tommy, one of the bucks, looks round and, "How could there be Tickle Tom cherry buns if Mrs. Kelly isn't going to be here?" And Alice says to him, "Well, I'm going to make them." "You make the buns," Tommy says. You're always in your wellies. You're only an old wally. Alice is a wally, always in her wellies. Alice is a wally, always in her wellies. Well, Alice thought to herself, and you know that it hurt her every time they started this, but she was well used to it. And she thought to herself, nothing, I'll do the deal. Make them know any different. I'll just get on with the job. And that's what she did that day anyway. She got on with the job instead of going to the forest that day. She made the buns for the fair the next day. And sure, harvest fair day, it dawned, the most beautiful bright September morning you ever did see, Donald. And Alice got up early and she got her, went to Mrs. Kelly's, took in the boxes of buns, and it had been arranged with Mr. Boyle. He's the buck that brings the spuds. Or, no, the lambs. No, Mr. Boyle brings the spuds. And that he would have the table set up, and all Alice would have to do would put the cloths on it and lay out the buns. So when Alice arrived, that's exactly what she did. Put the nice Mrs. Kelly's tablecloth, lovely bright colours, put them on, laid out the boxes of buns, and then turned to Mr. Boyle and said, "She, listen, I still have my chores to do at home." For her job in the morning was to feed the hens, you know, before she went anywhere. So Mr. Boyle says, "I'll keep an eye on things here till you get back." So off Alice went to feed the hens, and while she was gone, who arrived? Only Tommy and his cronies. And sure, the first thing they recognised was the colours of Mrs. Kelly's stall. So God, there was a stampede to her table, and Mr. Boyle was there, and the bucks, they were as greedy, they just couldn't stuff the buns under their mouths quick enough. And between mouthfuls, Tommy turns to Mr. Boyle and says, "He, where's Mrs. Kelly? These are the best buns ever." And sure, Mr. Boyle knew what was going on, and he says, "Now howl your donkeys, she'll be back, the good lady will be back in a wee minute." And with that, sure didn't Alice arrive back and go on behind the table. And Tommy's looking at her, "What are you doing in there, you wally, and where's Mrs. Kelly?" And Alice says, "Sure, Tommy, I told you at school yesterday that Mrs. Kelly was away to visit her sick sister and that I was making the buns." Well, you should have seen the look on Tommy's face. Well, anyway, a few days later, Mrs. Kelly came back. The sister, it turned out not to be as bad as the first thought. And sure, when Mrs. Kelly arrived back in Glentown, there was nothing but talk about how well Alice had done making the tickle tom and cherry buns. And even the children in the schoolyard were saying that she was a hero to them, for she saved the day. And when Mrs. Kelly met Alice, she gave her a big hug and says, "Sure, I told you you could do it." But anyway, throughout, I tell the children, that's one of the stories, I tell them that, and then we make the tickle tom cherry buns. But that first day, as I say, at home, I had prepared a batch first and brought them up and left them in the teacher's room.
Right.
And did the batch with the children in the classroom, and then whisked them off to the magic oven and waited a few minutes and brought the ones I prepared at home. And
but the teacher encouraged you very much. So
yes, Paddy McDyer.
He was very helpful to you.
So anyway, that was 2001, I think. Yeah. And in their wee Christmas magazine at the National School up here in Glenties, Paddy included a wee article about my visit. And Lord, another school must have read it, or he read it, and it grew. And
it took off.
And then I was invited to become part of the Heritage in the School scheme, which is a scheme run by the INTO and the Heritage Council. And I'm included in a directory, and I have the grand title of Heritage Specialist.
very good, though. It's just an interesting story, the way it took off.
Yeah. So that's issued to every national school in Ireland. And if it suits me to go where I'm invited, like I was in Mayo there like a week ago for 3 days, and just that, you know. So, and then the adult presentation came out of that as well. And that happened, in fact, the year my mother died. I'm trying to think now his name. I don't think it was 2005. I had a few weeks of a run up in Mayo, all over the place. I know to
different schools.
Different schools. Yeah. I know Mayo like the back of my hand. I was up right. and down for 6 weeks.
But you got on very well.
Yeah. But Sheila O'Connor, this incredible woman, she's a school coordinator down there, and it was she who said, God, Breezy, would you not do an evening in the hall for us? This was in Laherdon, County Mayo. Would you not do an evening in the hall for us? And from that, and I thought, feck, what am I going to do, you know? And then I thought, you know, all I have to do is adapt the children's presentation mm-hmm. and make it for adults. And
so you went for it?
And I went yeah. for it, and that took off as well, and the rest is history,
Brilliant.
You know? And I've been trying to develop another aspect to it for some years now, and it grows a little bit each year, to do a seafood show as well, if you like, you know, to just promote our ocean heritage
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. So you've written short stories going with a lot of the recipes, and
yeah
that's brilliant. That's very gifted.
Yeah, and they're all for the children, and it's my hope, Donald. It's my hope that I can, I would need to get maybe for Christmas market this year a collection of the Glentown stories and the recipes, and even if I just get them done on the laptop or get something like that, because publishing is so expensive. Do you know
when was your book published, though, Breezy? Would have been
2006.
Right.
Yeah. Bread, Scone, Stories and Songs.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Oh, I have. I was looking at the last two when somebody came in. Just Breezy, you're also into music, though.
Okay.
You sing a lot. And
Again, how do you hear that?
Smoking doesn't help.
Well, it doesn't do any harm either, now. Don't you have me all contraptioned up here. I want to get a glass of water.
Hold on. Right. You've wandered off to Dublin, even in places, Breezy.
Okay. Yeah. Again, Donald, it's the presentation I do it's very popular with the schools, and you know, word of mouth is a great
better than advertising.
Exactly. And that appears to be what's happening. Because even there, where was it? Oh yeah. I was in Mayo there, it's about 2 months ago now. I had 3 days at a school up there, Ross Cree National School, and that was my third visit back there. And it was word of mouth that, you know, another school recommended and so on. But anyway, it started that the Merino College
in Dublin.
The Teachers Training College. There's a book there, Paddy Madden, and he was one of the initiators of the Heritage and the Schools scheme. An incredible man, Donald. Incredible man. Great ambassador for Ireland and for our environment and our culture and everything. And he got included in the Merino College, a module. Wait a minute, what do they call it? Heritage. All the students, they have the possibility to choose a different module to do something extra on. And he got heritage studies as an extra module. So, this is not me blowing my own trumpet or anything.
No, you're just telling the facts.
From the heritage directory, chosen every year are some of the specialists to do a workshop at the Merino with the student teachers who are doing the heritage module. And this was my sixth year back. I've come out tops every year, you know. Just the I call them kids because sure they're only weans, but you know, the student teachers, you know, I've been the specialist that they've enjoyed most each time, you know. And I think it's because it's a hands-on presentation. It's a, and it's a fun experience they
it
have.
It is, yeah.
Because
everybody enjoys it.
Yeah, yeah. You see, there's more than one way to learn something, you know, and the visual slides and feckin' statistics and all of that can be quite intense and boring, and sometimes you can go in one and out the other, you know. Mm. But like the heritage that I recognise, Donald, it's not a sad heritage. It's not. It's a very, very unique one, you know. And what better way to share it than to sing it?
That's true.
Do you know?
Well, as you said that, Breezy, you also and this kind of stuff, you include music and your song, and
I do.
You sing a lot.
I do.
And you're into. We were talking earlier when we had tea there when I came in. We were talking about Percy French and song and the story.
Buck.
He was brilliant, wasn't he?
Mm.
One gift
of time. He was. Yeah. The I mean, as I say, as we were saying, I mean, he told the way that life was, you know, in song and story and recitation. Mm. You know, I mean, I recite two of his recitations. At some of the stories from the kitchen table shows that I do, the one, if I were a lady, I'd wear a hat for all the street to be looking at, and I'd have a lady's maid, do you mind, to lace and button me dress behind, a dress that would be lined with fine sateen, none of your bits of bombazine, and the girls in envy would grind their teeth when they heard it rustling underneath. If I were a lady. But then I'm not. Sure, this old shawl is the decentest thing I've got. If I were a lady, I'd drive to the play, and I'd look through me opera glasses and say, I've seen this terrible review before, and the leading lady's an awful bore. Let's all get up when she starts to sing, and go and eat cake in a restaurant. And a powdered puff I'd dab on my nose, and then I'd drive home in a taxi cab. If I were a lady. But then I'm not. Sure, a pass to the gallery is all I've got. If I were a lady, a regular swell, with a hairy bow and a silk umbrella, 'tis me would walk into the Shelburne Hotel and order me dinner, some pork and beans, and whatever you've got in them soup machines, and both a sweet and a hunk of cheese, and a bottle of porter if you please. Then I'd call for me bill and settle in it, I'd give the waiter a threepenny bit. If I were a lady, but then I'm not. Sure, my dinner comes out of a stirabout pot. Still, there's a lot of show and sham. Maybe I'm better off the way I am.
Absolutely brilliant.
Aye, but and isn't it a story?
It is a story.
Isn't it? I got a word wrong there. It wasn't soup machines, it was soup tureens.
Tureens.
They wouldn't have had many machines in those days.
But you include recitation and song.
I do,
yeah.
I do.
Absolutely
I do.
Brilliant.
And you see there now, like, making that wee mistake.
Mm-hmm.
A soup machine rather than a soup tureen. I stopped beating myself up about making mistakes. Like, Donald, you wouldn't believe the number of times that I have been, and for want of another word, a show, if you like. You know, it's a night of
entertainment
promoting our, you know, the number of times I've forgotten ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just make it part of it because that's how life is. Do you know? Mm-hmm. That's how life is.
Breezy, will you sing me a few of his songs? I'll give you a break if you want to.
Right, so Shane, you never wrote. Donald, I'll tell you a song I'll sing for you, and it's one that I grew up listening to my mother sing. And it was the first time I sang it was the first time I actually realised that I could sing. And it was when I was working in Tory Island, which was about... What do we see now? My daughter is, she'll be 21 this year. I'm wild with numbers and dates, and but it's certainly 15 years ago. I think it was the first season the hotel was open in Tory.
All right.
The first time I'd been to Tory was with Frank Mulroney, the vet, when I was about 18. There was an emergency call on the island, and I was lucky to get to go on the run. And do you know, we actually needed a translator that time on Tory Island.
All Gaelic spoken.
It was all Gaelic.
Yeah,
all Gaelic.
Very, very little English.
All Gaelic.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, from that day on, it was my mission to get back there. And there was the job for the chef in the hotel was advertised. It was before, just for, they wanted a chef for Easter. And sure, that was my opportunity.
You went for it?
I went for
head
it.
Head over heels.
Yeah. And I got the job, and I worked there for nearly two seasons. But anyway, that was the first time I actually sang, was in the bar in the hotel, Austin Horry, one night. And I talk about being brave. I was fucking shitting myself. And that's as true as there's hairs in a gooseberry.
Yeah.
For nobody had ever told me I could sing.
Mm.
But I loved singing.
Yeah, you love the music,
yeah,
and the beat. And
yeah. Like I grew, like Mammy, the business that we were in, the hotel business.
Entertainment, yeah.
Mammy, like she ran the show. She was the cook. She was everything, you know. And then at night, well, the Kelvin was the first singing lounge in Glenties. And Peter Oliver, actually, in the corner house in Ardra, got his first gig in the Kelvin.
That's a bit of history.
Yeah, but I remember lying in bed upstairs, and I could hear Mammy. Mammy would inevitably be invited to sing, and I remember lying in bed in the summer. It was this was a summer thing, business if you like, lying in the bed listening to Mammy singing on the mic, and thinking, "Oh my goodness."
She was a good singer too.
Oh God, you've no idea. I remember one night, and God Almighty, how old I was. I can't have been more than 8 or 9. I know I must have been smaller, because Mammy was able to lift me up in her arms. But I was lying up in the bed, heard Mammy singing, and sneaked down to look in the side door, and me in my pyjamas. And sure, didn't Mammy spy me? She spied me, and she took me up, and she sang with holding me in her arm. Yeah, she sang that Doris Day song, Que Sera. That was Mammy's song,
yeah.
I actually.
That was her party piece.
That was, you know. But this one I'm going to sing that I told you I sang for the first time. It was the first time I sang in public. Noreen Bourne. Beautiful song.
Brilliant song.
There's a glen in old Tyrconnell. There's a cottage in that glen, where once dwelled as fair a maiden as inspired a poet's pen. She was handsome, hale and hearty, fair and graceful as a fawn. Neighbors loved that widow's daughter, happy laughing Noreen Bond. Till one day there came a letter, with her passage paid to go to the land of the Missouri, where the Mississippi flows. Soon she had got all things ready, and one morning at the dawn, a mother broken-hearted parted with her Noreen Bond. Many years that widow waited, till one evening at her door stood a gorgeous looking lady, costly wear the clothes she wore, whispering, "Mother, don't you know me? Sure, I've only caught a cold." But two purple spots upon her cheeks the tragic story told. Long and sadly passed that winter, till the daisies decked the lawn, and that tickling cough grew worse, killing poor young Noreen Bond. There's a graveyard in Tyrconnell, where the blossoms sadly wave. There's a broken-hearted mother kneeling o'er a lonely grave. Oh, my Storeen, she is crying, 'tis I'm lonesome since you've gone. 'Twas the curse of emigration laid you here, my Noreen Bond. Yes, the curse of emigration laid you here, my Noreen Bond.
Brilliant. There's an galanta.
My mother. Aye.
That was her favourite.
It was, yeah, she sang it.
Your voice is good, Breezy.
Ach, my voice is deteriorating. Like, joking aside about the cigarettes and all, but, like, it is deteriorating. I notice it myself. Do you know? It's changed. I'm not... It's got a different depth or something to it now. I don't know. But I like singing, Donald. I love singing. Yeah.
So you sing a different repertoire of song, you know, at your entertainment.
Yeah, throughout. I just...
Whatever.
There's nothing ever, there's no, it's what comes to
what
my
comes
mind
to you,
as a,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. A song that I sing for the children, actually I sing it now at adult things sometimes as well. I have great time for themselves, you know. A body must be careful. Well, that's so good. Nadini Bug.
But which song is that?
I have great time for themselves.
Ah, yeah.
Nadini Bug. Mm. And I include stories about them in my presentation, you know. And I sing a song for the kids just about one of the family, the Pixie, you know. As I was walking through the woods one day, one of the fairy folk I chanced to spy, and on his tiny head he wore a little piece. Sure, I'll have that hat, says I. Well, it was red and green and it was stitched with gold. 'Twas a handsome sight for to behold, and from the point of it there dangled golden bells. One rang high, the other low. The Pixie sang a song. It was of trees and beasts. It was a magic song, to that I swear. The Pixie then bows low, and he disappears. Sure, he turned into a hare, and away he runs, and I take up the chase. And to be sure, it was a hardy race. He twisted here and there, did that crafty hare. I could not long keep up the pace. Well, I was out of breath, could hardly take a step. So I sat down upon a fallen tree, and as I tarried there to rest my weary legs, sure I quickly fell asleep. Well, I'd had 40 winks, about an hour had passed, before I opened my eyes again at last. And there, to my surprise, before me very eyes, the Pixie sat upon the grass. Well, how do you do, sissy, and do you like me hat? And that comes off his head and onto mine. The pixie then bows low and he disappears. Sure, he's laughing all the time. Well, I feel fine and bold and red and green and gold. I feel a handsome sight for to behold. But when I got home and down the street did roam, I was embarrassed to be told. 'Twas made of two dock leaves and stitched with horse's hair. 'Twas a strangely sight for to behold. And from the point of it, there dangled acorn shells, and neither made no sound at all. That's the pixie song for you. The kids love that.
Where'd you get that one, Breeze?
A woman by the name of Alana Lennon. An English woman. An English woman. I met her in Fintown. An incredibly gifted woman as well. And it was given to her by somebody, you know. I don't know its origin at all.
Do you believe in fairies, Breezy?
Well, no, I wouldn't deny that. you know, but that's what I was saying to you. Mm-hmm. We have to be careful.
Yeah.
They're a conch.
Yeah, but you've heard stories galore about them.
Okay, aye. I mean, do you know what it is? There's no doubt in my mind that at one time in Ireland, humans and the fairy folk lived in complete harmony with each other. Do you know of that? I have no doubt. But I tell you what, we turned on them. You know, the greed took over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, they got scornered of us. Mm-hmm. They went away from us, mm-hmm. and it's our big loss, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
It really.
They were definitely there, like.
I mean, it's like even the marking of the bread, you know. I mean, there's many explanations for why bread is marked, but the simple truth of it, the bread was marked, cut into, to let themselves out, to let the fairy folk out. Because the traditional people, as I refer to our wise ancestors, you know, the traditional people, the people that still knew, you know, that cows were magical mm-hmm. creatures and mm-hmm. that, you know, the fairy folk were equally magic,
yeah.
Do you know? They knew that from the moment the earth was ploughed, you know, the seeds sown, the growing, the harvest, the reaping, harvesting, right to the moment the bread was to go into the oven, they knew that the fairies' help was involved, and they opened the bread to let them out so they could carry on their work. You know, but like so many of our traditional truths, Christianity even stole that one, because bread, the marking of the bread is associated with Christianity in these not so traditional times. You know, but bread was being baked and marked long before the invention of Christianity, you know. But yeah, of course.
Breezy. Our time is running.
Yeah, I know, I did go on
a bit. No, I don't mind that at all. You're a very, very gifted woman, Breezy, but will you sing one more a recitation before and we'll conclude the story?
Do you want a song or a recitation? Or
a song, preferably.
So, what do we think? The Chandler Shop. Again, I don't know whether it, I think it might have been the Dublin City Ramblers or... I can't remember where I learned it, do you know, but it was from a CD of some description. It's a jovial song, and that's what it's about. Now, without as I went into the chandler shop, some candles for to buy, I went into the chandler shop, but no one could I spy. Now I was disappointed, so some angry words I said, when I heard the sound of a right above me head. Yes, I heard the sound of a right above me head. Now I was quick and I was slick, and up the stairs I fled, and very surprised was I to find the chandler's wife in bed, and with her was another man of quite considerable size, and they were having a right before me eyes. Yes, and they were having a right before me eyes. Now when the fun was over and done, the lady raised her head, and very surprised was she to find me standing by the bed. If you would be discreet, me boy, if you would be so kind, why don't you come up for some whenever you feel inclined? Oh, why don't you come up for some whenever you feel inclined? So many's a night and many's a day when the chandler wasn't home, to get meself some candles to the chandler's shop I'd roam. But never a one she give to me, she give to me instead a little bit more of the to light me way to bed. Just a little bit more of the to light me way to bed. So come all you married men, take heed whenever you go to town, and if you leave your wives alone, be sure and tie them down. Or if you'd be so kind to them, just lie them down there on the floor, and give them so much of that they'll never want any more. Oh, and give them so much of that they'll never want any more.
good old song to finish.
Good
on
good jolly song.
It's jolly.
Jolly song.
Breezy, thank you for your time and
thank
your
you
knowledge.
Lord.
And
thank you.
You're a gifted woman, without a doubt.
As I said to you, you'd blow a pig's head in anybody.
Good morning, good Breezy.
Slán an edge, slán.
Amor.